Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established, mid-career, debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy.
This episode of Conversations with Friends is with Emily Gale, Nina Kenwood, and Bronte Coates. Emily Gale has worked in the children's book industry for over 20 years, half of those in Australia. Her young adult novels have been published in Australia, the UK, the USA, and Germany, and her junior fiction character Eliza Bloom has been translated into multiple languages. The Other Side of Summer, published by Penguin Random House, was shortlisted for the Victorian Premier's Literary Award and the Aurelius Award, and was a Junior Library Guild title in the US for HarperCollins. Her most recent novel, I Am Out with Lanterns, was shortlisted for the Ethel Turner Prize and the WA Young Readers Book Award. Her forthcoming middle grade novel was co-written with Nova Wheatman and will be published in 2021 by Text.
Nina Kenwood is a writer who lives in Melbourne. Her debut young adult novel, It Sounded Better in My Head, won the 2018 Text Prize and was published in Australia by Text Publishing in 2019. It was shortlisted in the 2020 New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards, the Indie Book Awards, the Australian Book Industry Awards, and the ABA Bookseller's Choice Book of the Year Awards, and has been published in the US, Italy, and Spain.
Bronte Coates is a writer based in Melbourne. She currently works for Readings Bookshop. In 2015, she was longlisted for the Rochelle Prize for Emerging Writers.
This is our first trio of writers. And they do such a good job. Can I just say, they do such a good job of making sure you know who is talking. That was a brilliant introduction.
How did they not keep talking over each other? Like,
I don't know.
I was impressed
maybe they
by
did
alone.
A lot of Zooming. I loved their chat and the way they begin with their writers group, which started at Reading. So these guys are not only do they have all those ridiculously long awards to their names, for Nina and Emily, certainly, they all worked at Readings and that's where they formed their writers group. And this is, might I say, the most unusual writers group I have ever heard about.
What do you mean? In terms of size or?
In terms of size. So you don't often hear writers' groups of three.
That's
but
true.
Also the way that they function on challenges rather than feedback. I loved that. I thought
sounds
that was
like,
so clever.
It sounds like Nina Kenwood is the one winning all the challenges.
That's really true. But I did love that. And I think that they also say, you know, they ask for feedback at really – important times at different times in how each of their books are progressing, but it's also that kind of put your bum in the seat and do the work.
It's interesting just seeing, and I felt a lot of myself in how they talked, but just that evolution from, I think Nina had looked through the history of email trails.
I love that.
To find the excuses that each of them had used for not writing, but there is a tipping point where you just not, it just is not a question anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those excuses. They are very funny, these three. Like I think that there should be quite a number of spin-off podcasts from this Conversation
this
with Friends series. And I reckon that these three could definitely be one of them.
I completely agree.
I thought their stuff on motherhood was particularly wonderful. And especially since obviously there's such a gap, you know, like Emily's got now teenage kids, Bronte and Nina both have very small babies, and just the way they talk about it. I think Nina says, there has been nothing in my life that has turned my life more upside down than this, and talks really frankly about the fact that she feels her writing career has taken a hit because of having a child. Not that she regrets it, and she's at great pains to say that, as we all do all the time, but you know, she really notes it, and I think that that's important to talk about.
Well, it sort of feels like, and I remember feeling this way when Tilly was born, it feels like it's over, like there's just no, it's not possible, or it's not possible for 5 years or for a pretty long period of time. But I remember when
it must have been just when Tilly was born, or maybe I was pregnant. You gave me Rachel Power's book. I think it's called Motherhood and Creativity, which is the best.
The Divided Heart.
It is so good. It's the best book to give any pregnant writer.
Yep.
It is basically just an anthology of different types of artists. A lot of them are writers. And they talk about that first initial phase of motherhood and whether it fueled or completely stifled their creativity.
Yeah, I think that that's really true. You know, the other thing it made me think about is, of course, because we have interviewed Nina, but you interviewed Nina when her book came out, and you and I did not know that she just had a baby. And it was like...
It was like a really little weeks baby. Old. Yeah. Like, it was not...
I remember us standing in the studio as Nina's like talking to us and then reveals that she's got like a 16-day-old baby at home and she really better get back. And our jaws just dropped to the ground. We were both like, oh my gosh, get out of here now. How are you even like standing up and focusing on the world at all? It was amazing. So for the fact that she has released this book and done all the things in this time is already a win as far as I'm concerned.
I liked Bronte talking about the best, like in your head, the nicest way to meet a writing hero is that you meet casually in a cafe and then become friends. I totally know this feeling.
Oh my
Kate
God.
McLennan lives near me. I don't know where, but she is often at Preston Library at the same hour. If I could follow her home, I would follow her home. But she's often in Preston Library at the same time that I am, and I'm constantly trying to sidle over and make friends.
But you should, like Bronte did, just make her a cake.
Yeah, I should.
Drop it out. I think they all, you know, they're all book industry people, and they tell very, very amusing book industry stories. And I am so going to DM Nina and find out who the diva, the American male, white male author who wouldn't touch his own bags was. Oh. That was a great story. Heavens above. Someone still has to release the podcast of all of the, you know, green room stories that we don't really tell in public at all. The diva behavior.
The other thing I want to say is Nina made a great book recommendation.
I was honestly, can I tell the truth? I was sitting in the dark this morning at my 5:30 get up listening to this episode, and they start telling their recommendations, and I was like, oh, this is really sweet. Nina's going to, you know, recommend Emily's book, which is wonderful. I'm Out with Lanterns. And then she recommended mine. And even though I'm in a room all by myself, I completely blushed, put my head in my hands and started making like weird choking noises under the desk. So I think that I'm going to have to like progress through this stage. I don't know what this stage is called, Catherine.
Oh, it's a hard stage.
I think I need to progress through it.
She also made the suggestion that we have actually talked about already, about dissecting the writing of The Mother Fault across a spoiler-riddled couple of episodes of the podcast. So I'm looking forward to that when I finally get a copy of this book in my hands.
I promise you, it's got like, you know, big
it's coming by
all over it.
Courier pigeon.
It's coming by courier pigeon. It's the only way to do it in a pandemic.
Hello, welcome to our Conversations with Friends episode. I'm Nina, and here with me is Emily.
Hello.
And Bronte.
Hello.
And we have the honour, I think, of being the first and only trio on this series. So you'll be able to tell us apart when we're talking. Emily is the very English one. I'm the nasally one who sounds like she's getting over a cold, and Bronte is just the one with the very warm, friendly voice.
That's very kind.
So the reason we're doing this as a trio is because the three of us are a writing group. And I thought we should start our conversation there with the fact that our writing group has existed for about 6 years now. And I feel like 6 years is a long time for a writing group. So I think we've done pretty well. How does our group work? Why does it work? And why have we kept this up?
I would just like to reflect on the fact that I wasn't 40 when our group started. And I'm now very, very much over 40, which feels big. I think one of the reasons that it has worked so well is because it is just the three of us. And we are able, because it's just three of us, to put a lot of energy into the group. You know, we all have quite different roles, but I feel like we never kind of run out of energy for one another.
I mean, a bit of context of how we started, we were all working at readings 6 years ago. So one of the reasons I think our writing group works is because we don't do a lot of intensive feedback. We share feedback at key moments in our projects, which are based on our own timelines, but we do a lot of challenges. And the first challenge we did, we had to write a set number of words. And if you didn't write your word count, nobody was allowed to reward themselves. So there was this added pressure to hit your word count because you were, you know, you were letting other people down. And I think I always remember, we don't do those kind of challenges now, but that was definitely our first one.
We're still very rewards-based though, aren't we?
Yes, very rewards-focused. I looked back at some of our emails in preparation for this, and yes, we used to be very focused on word counts. We would email strictly every week, but sometimes when we were doing word challenges, we were emailing every day to check in. And we always used to feel, we always used to, when we didn't hit our word counts, we would always explain why. So there were a lot of excuses being given, whereas nowadays we don't bother with that. It's just I didn't write.
Like, it's a given that we've got lots of excuses. It's a given,
it's assumed. Yeah. Whereas we would always be quite elaborate with our and ridiculous with our excuses. Emily, there were some from you that were, one was I painted a room yesterday and today I couldn't write because my arms were slightly sore. Another one was you couldn't write. You got lost on a bike ride in Abbotsford and the stress of that meant you couldn't write all weekend.
That's pathetic. I do remember getting lost, but as for using that as an excuse not to write, that is really down there scraping the barrel.
The majority of my early excuses were based around TV and watching TV. My eyes being so puffy from crying at a TV episode, I couldn't look at my computer.
Wait, which episode, Nina?
That was when I was watching Parenthood, the TV show.
Understandable.
But it could be any real, it could have been any TV show.
I love how imaginative that is, really. It really shows we are fiction writers because these are really quite outlandish excuses for not sitting down and writing a novel.
Oh, Bronte, there was a whole period where you were just making costumes or stressing about making costumes.
Yes.
A dance performance. That took out like 6 months of writing time, I think.
I would send you guys photos as well of my costumes to be like, look, this is how much work I've done. And you're like, great, we don't care.
Dear. You haven't written in 6 months.
It has to be said that Nina and I are probably the two bossy members of the group. And I often feel like Bronte gets a very raw deal because because Bronte is always lovely and kind, no matter what terrible excuses Nina and I come up with, Bronte always just makes room for that and says, that's okay, that is really fine.
Yeah.
Whereas it's when Bronte has been making costumes, we're both, Bronte, put down the needle and thread, pick up your novel.
It's probably important to note you both have works published and I don't. And I feel like that's probably to do... one of the questions about the group when we were talking about having this chat was, you know, what were the positives and negatives? And one of the negatives for me is you guys have like, you're so prolific, you write so much. And sometimes I'm like, you'll be like, I wrote 3,000 words and I'll go, I wrote 200 this week. And it was such an achievement for me. But it's probably that's why I'm more forgiving of excuses because I'm like, I have so many that feel important. When they're not.
Yeah. Bronte, you are very giving. I found an email that you sent me once in one of my many, many, I'm giving up, and you said, here are 32 reasons to keep working on your book, and you were listing them out one by one, and then it stopped. It didn't quite get to 32 because you said, sorry, the email ended with, I have to get off the tram now, but you spent your whole tram ride writing out 32 reasons for me to keep working on my book.
That is typical.
And that's just what a very typical email of how I feel like our group, the other good thing, since Bronte and I have had our first child during the time of our group. And once that happened, I feel like a lot of our A lot of our talk turned to texting instead of emailing, just because it was easier with babies. But I do feel like it's like we're always mid-conversation and you can pick it up at any point. And I can send you a text about anything writing or book related at any time, just a random thought, and then the conversation's just going and we're always mid-conversation.
That's right. You never have to feel like this is a bad time to mention that I'm thinking about this particular aspect of publishing or writing. And I don't have that many people in my life who I could text at any time of the day and just say something really random about writing and know that they're not going to be bored by it and they're not going to not get it. They're just going to immediately reply with their feelings on the matter.
Well, that's like, I guess if people listening to this podcast are wondering like how to have a successful writing group, I think that sense of having a space, like I always think this is the one space I have where I'm like, I don't feel embarrassed talking about my writing goals in a serious way.
Yeah.
Like I might feel embarrassed with other friends being like, well, I want to write this book about this. And I'd have this kind of self-consciousness that I'm like a writer selling this, but I don't feel that way in this group. And I think that's really important to have that space.
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Without a doubt, there is zero chance I would have written a book if it weren't for this group, which I did say the whole time I was sort of promoting my book. Having a space where you can be comfortable and open and, yeah, be taken seriously while also a lot of laughter and not taking things seriously, but we always take each other's writing very seriously.
And accountable. Bronte, again, you have sent these weekly check-in emails to see how we're going. And you have also set up the Google Docs where we, you know, put in our word counts every time we do have a writing challenge. And I definitely agree with Nina. I don't think I would have finished writing The Other Side of Summer, which is the first book I was working on when our group formed. And that's while I was still working at readings. And I couldn't really see how to make, my children were sort of fairly young at the time, working at readings and writing that book. I couldn't really see how to make it work. But as soon as we formed the group and we started really pushing each other, there came the book. And, you know, that was pretty life-changing for me.
Well, I'm very glad that you've both finished the books that you were working. Like, I love The Other Side of Summer, Emily. And I think that's also important in the group is I very much trust both your opinions. I like the stuff you write. I have been in writing groups before, which haven't lasted, a couple of them. And partly one of them, we were all just writing very different things and also didn't really click in that sense as well. But I always, even though we write very different books and very different styles, I trust you guys as readers. I trust you as, like, I feel like I get what you're doing.
Emily, I'm going to you now because I just want to say you've published 4 YA novels, 2 junior fiction novels. You're the co-author of a middle grade that's coming out next year with Text. You're currently working on another middle grade. You've worked for agents, publishers, booksellers. You do manuscript assessments. So you are the wise one of the group. Oh, God. I was going to say the wise owl at some point. I don't know why. Tell us just quickly everything you know, just a quick recap, everything you know about writing and publishing.
Yeah, okay. I actually feel like I'm the weary one of the group, very, very weary. And I feel like I'm definitely the cynical one.
I was going to say, you're the cynical one for sure.
I am so cynical, yeah. But I'm still here, still trying with publishing. So that hopefully says something to you that despite all the things I complain about, I still think it's sort of worth being here. You know, obviously, yes, I have been an editor and I have been a bookseller and I have worked for an agent and, various other things. But I think as soon as you're sitting down in front of a computer and you're a writer, all of that just tumbles out of your brain. You forget everything and you're just a very vulnerable writer like everybody else. So although I have good advice about submitting to publishers and, I'm pretty good on the structure of other people's books and that sort of thing. In terms of, you know, how to manage a writing career, I sort of feel a little bit of a...
What do you think is sort of, how do you know when to stop writing something and how do you know when to keep going? Like when, because the story is always you finish your first draft and it's a mess. How do you know, or even you're working on it and it always will feel like a mess, how do you know when it's worth keep going or when this is really just something you should move on from?
Yeah, it's very slippery and it is a feeling. You obviously read back over your work time and time and time again. I feel like I can feel some joy anytime I read something back over and think, oh no, there is something here. It's just that it's not right yet. And that's what makes me keep redrafting all the time. And I think a lot of new writers don't realize quite how much redrafting we do. I was mentoring a writer last year, and he self-published a couple of novels and he wanted my help for writing a new book. And when I started to explain, you know, some of the problems with his synopsis, some of the problems with his first three chapters, he said quite openly, I have never worked so hard on something before. I've always just written a first draft, read back, thought, okay, it needs a bit of tidying up. And then I thought, that's done. And now I realize how much redrafting you actually do. That's how much I should be doing as well.
What's your answer to that question, Nina?
I had a similar answer when I was thinking about it. I was thinking, if I take some time away from a manuscript, even if it's just a couple of days or a week or two, and then you come back to it and you read it, and you know, because there's this push and pull when you're writing, you're both doubting all the time, doubting, but a little part of you also has to, there's ego in there too. You have to believe that you're good at it to keep going. So if you go back and you read it and you think, actually, this is pretty good, or you get that feeling, no, there's, like you said, there's something here, then that's when I think you know to keep going. I don't know, saying that, when I looked back at our emails, there was a time where I had written 100,000 words of an adult manuscript, and I said, it was a rough first draft, 100,000 words, and I said, I've just got this like new idea, I just feel like working on a YA, and you were both like, yeah, just go work on it, just chuck that 100,000. And that was lucky. That's the book that became, it sounded better in my head, that became what I published. But I look back on how casually we all were like, yeah, chuck that 100,000. And I think, I guess it was just gut instinct. So it's sometimes the shiny new idea is the one that you should go for, and sometimes the shiny new idea is a trick that is just distracting you from what you should be working on. And I don't really know how to know the difference.
It's just so funny because I think my process is so different from you guys, partly because, as you know, I'm like a one idea person. I have the one idea. Our whole 6 years I've written, you know, one manual. I've worked on pretty much one idea the whole time with some, I occasionally make an attempt at nonfiction before realizing I can never write nonfiction.
That is not true.
And
not
then
true.
I return. I have
Emily
too many
and I are living and waiting for your collection of funny essays and your memoir. Let's not get into that.
Stay committed to my statement that I won't do it until my entire family is killed. Then I'll do it. But you know, I always have one idea, and I've, you know, I've finished two full manuscripts throughout like the time I've been writing since graduating uni, one before I joined this group, one during it. And both times, the reasons I moved on from both of them is I often start my idea as like a seed of an idea, and I'm like, this is what I know the book is at its heart, and it's this feeling I have, but then it takes me a few years to write it. And then if I move past that seed or that initial feeling where I was like, this is the idea I want to tell, that's when I know I need to move on, because I don't have that original spark, because I've changed so much as a person. But I do think writing those books gets you to the next book that you're going to write, or writing those words gets you to, you know, probably those words you spent, Nina, on that adult manuscript would have helped you write the new shiny new idea, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I agree. I believe there are no words wasted. Like whatever you're working on, whatever you're writing is bringing you closer to the next thing, or what you're meant to be writing, or is practice. It's your 10,000 hours. So do you remember, Bronte, you said you first started writing seriously when you finished uni. Is that the first time that you, or when do you start, when did you think I want to be a writer? And then when did you start going, I'm going to start actually trying to be?
I mean, I wanted to be a writer my whole life. So I was at school, I knew I wanted to do writing when I was at school. I went through a phase where I was like, I'm going to write plays. And then I was like, I'm going to write poetry, but it was always writing. And I was submitting work when I was at school. And I remember the first thing I got published was a story called Captain Pinkbeard's Fart in grade 7.
That could be a junior fiction series. Let's talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I think, you know, and I knew in grade 11, 12, I was pretty sure I'd study creative writing. And that's, yeah, I've looked at other things, but that was always, I think, for me, a thing I wanted to do seriously. And what about you guys?
First wanted to be a writer when I was in high school, and then I studied creative writing at uni. And then I think I spent my whole 20s writing sort of around full-time work. And I had this idea that I had to be published by 30. If I didn't publish my first novel by 30, then I don't know, like the gate's closed, time is over, your opportunity's gone. And, you know, I had all these like to-do before I'm 30 lists. It was like run a marathon, publish a book. None of them happened. And joining this group was the turning point for me of actually finishing things and taking that that accountability and feeling like I wasn't just in my own head all the time on weekends and after work going, what am I doing? Is this, why am I doing this? To be in the trenches with someone else is so much easier. What about you, Em?
I don't know what I was thinking, really, because I have always wanted to be a writer, but I think in my head it felt like a bit like sort of saying I wanted to be a unicorn, like a very, like a ridiculous thing to want to be, but I still really wanted to be it. So I don't think I took it seriously, even though I was constantly thinking about it, because I've never studied creative writing. I feel very bad about that now. I really wish I had, and I would really love to at some point. It sort of feels like, is it a bit late now to study creative writing or not? I don't know. But I can remember when I got pregnant with my first baby, I think it was in 2003. You'd think I would know that, but I'm very bad with years. And I was so happy to be pregnant. And then about 5 minutes later, I said to my partner, oh my God, I've ruined my chances of being a writer, because obviously I'll never do it now. And he was like, okay, that's a strange thing to be thinking. We've been trying to have a baby for quite a long time. I think that did something to my brain. Like, if you do want to do this, you actually have to write some things. So I think the year of having a baby was the start, which I think that, you know, there's a lot of writing on how motherhood changes you as a writer or stops you from being a writer. But for me, it started me being a writer.
Bronte and I have both just, you, how old is Elodie?
Elodie is 16 months.
16, yep. And my daughter Abby is 1.
I feel like they're both my babies as well, even though they're definitely not my babies.
Oh, well,
you go, writing.
I guess sort of bouncing off what Em said about like that idea that having a baby or motherhood changes how you think about writing. I mean, obviously you have far less time. I think it's funny. Nina said early on, I think after we'd both had the babies, you were like, I used to think I didn't have time to write, but now I see I had endless time. And I'm like, oh yeah. I can see that. So I think the time's obviously a really big thing, and it's really hard, I think, to adjust your routine. So I used to spend 4 or 6 hours on a weekend where I would go to a cafe and write, and that was like my one writing time, and I just don't have that time anymore. You know, but I think the other thing for me, just I think it is similar to what you're saying, Em, where you're like, suddenly you're like, I have to take this more seriously, or I have to, I think for me it's like more important than ever that I write something. Like, not that maybe I publish a book I think like Dina, I thought I'd publish a book before I was 30, which definitely hasn't happened. I don't think I'll even do it in time that you did it, Nina, because you were 33. 30.
No, I was 30. Oh, God, I don't even know how old I am. I was 35. I was 35.
I don't even think I'm going to make your cutoff now. But I think like that idea now, it's more important than ever that I have something that's for me, that is my writing, and that's something that's separate from this new identity I have. That's so important to me now. So I don't know if it's changed what I want to write about, but it has changed that kind of feeling I have about wanting to write is much more intense now. What about you, Nina?
Nina, how has it changed for you?
I feel like, yeah, I'm kind of the opposite in that. So my book was published 3 months after I had Abby. And so from the minute I was pregnant, I lost all creativity. I just felt like my mind closed down. I did no writing during the pregnancy. And then her first year has been, I had a period where I have done some writing, but a lot of it is sort of, I feel like, and it's the time thing, but as well as that, just feeling like it's taken a while to feel like yourself again after pregnancy. And you know, there has been nothing in my life that has turned my life so upside down as motherhood. And I feel like it's been the most amazing thing in the world, and I've loved it more than I ever could have thought. But at the same time, I feel like it's taken a year, 2 years out of, it's set me back probably 2 years in my writing career in terms of where I would have, I'm confident I would have written another book by now. And I see like other people who had a debut last year has releasing their second book this year, next year, and I really wanted to have another book out quickly. You know, you have that sense of I need the momentum. I've put one book out, but I don't want to lose I want people to be able to remember who I am. I want to put another book out while there's still time, while I have this moment. And trying to be a mother at the same time has meant I feel like it's definitely had a big impact on my creativity.
I just wanted to add it should be worth noting that sometimes Nina thrives in competition. Sometimes when we have very competitive writing challenges, Nina always surpasses us.
Yes.
So I think that's why when you're talking about looking at other debut authors and you're
that's
like,
true. Oh. Yep.
Like that
I'm very competitive and I'm like, I've fallen behind all my peers already. I only released my book last year. I'm already way behind everyone else around me. I'm failing. I feel like it does in the same way that people talk about, you know, that motherhood takes, your career takes a hit. I feel like as well, writing career definitely, I you can't do everything, which everyone tells you, and then you don't actually realize. Yeah.
I think though, also like one of the things, like when you're talking about advice for people who are struggling motherhood or new parenthood with creativity, I think of something somebody said to me before I had Elodie, which was like, if you're going through a phase and you can't bear it and it's like you can't stand it, just remember in 2 months it will be different. And I think that's really important because I'm like, I have definitely written way less and like done a lot less with Elodie, but I'm like, you know what? She's not going to be this baby forever and it's going to be different 5 years. Like I think it's really hard to remember that sometimes, but I think, you know, that's one of the hardest things is like not feeling stuck in the moment with a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you still tell yourself that this too shall pass when they're teenagers as well, because they they can still be a thorn in your side at times.
We keep saying to him, when does it get easier?
it just keeps changing.
So to take a slight turn, so away from motherhood and into the other side of our lives, which is that we have all worked in the book industry, in and around books for a long time. Have you ever had a interesting or wild interaction with another author from a not from an author to author perspective, but from working in the industry as a.
I have had a very strange career. So my first editorial job was doing Peter Rabbit books. Then I jumped into this this publishing house that had just set up, and it was a completely mad publishing house. And one day the boss came upstairs to the editorial office and said, someone needs to be Joan Collins' editor. Who's going to put their hand up? And I'm so sorry to say that nobody put their hand up. And I felt, as I always feel, this sort of compulsion to volunteer because nobody was volunteering. I felt so terrible that no one was volunteering. So I put my hand up. So then I found myself, age 25, Joan Collins editor. So I had to go and meet Joan Collins.
This is how all people get their editors, right? Is that just at every publishing house, someone comes in, who wants to be Nina Kenwood's editor? Not me.
That is how they do it everywhere. Don't let them tell you otherwise. No, it's not. This is very unusual. But the first time I went to her house, I was so nervous. And of course, she lives in this extremely gorgeous place in London. And I went along and I was early because I'm early for everything. And I was walking around and I suddenly realised that I had stepped in the biggest pile of dog turd you've ever seen in your life. And it was like 5 minutes to go till I was due to ring on Joan Collins' doorbell. So I was looking all around for things to scrape. I couldn't scrape it off. I'm like, I can't walk into Joan Collins' house with this stuff all over my boot. So I found some dried leaves and kind of like did my best with the dried leaves. But then I thought, God, the smell, that's going to be really bad. They're going to be sitting close to one another talking about her manuscript and I'm going to really smell of dog poo. So I looked in my bag and I had a bottle of Chanel perfume. So I just sprayed my boot with the entire bottle of Chanel. It's Chanel number 19, if we're going to be specific. And then a couple of minutes later, there I am ringing on her doorbell. She opens the door, no makeup. Looked completely amazing. And then this is like the punchline of the story. She made me a cup of instant coffee. Oh, it was so weird. And that's my story of being Joan Collins' editor for a very short amount of time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. do we have any other stories about authors that will make me look less strange?
Yeah, I was a publicist for several years, and my story is, I'm not going to say who it was, white, male, American author. No one will know him.
I'm not going to say who mine was either. It wasn't Joan Collins, it was someone else.
Carry on. Anyway, he was big in another industry and he'd written a book, and he was coming out to Australia for a tour, and just I'd set it all up, and then just before he sort of was due to fly out, he said, and he was bringing his wife, he said, oh, by the way, my wife and I, we don't touch our bags. Like, we don't intend to, we don't pick up or carry our bags. We will not be touching or lifting our bags this whole tour. Also, we don't get cabs. And this was before... This was before Uber or anything was around. We need a private car with a private driver and we will not touch our bags.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, dear, sir, this is the Australian book industry. We have to touch our bags here. when he arrived, then he decided to have a meeting at the airport and he sent his suitcase alone in the private car back to the hotel.
Anyway. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
He was a nightmare.
I feel like that level of diva is just so strange to me that
yes.
I think I maybe need to be a bit more of a diva as an author.
Yes.
Because I have
that
heard
be our,
it's very useful.
Our aim. We should all start demanding more.
A little bit more.
I don't have like a very crazy author story to share, but just talking about this makes me think. I know you guys both know I feel this way, but I am. Often when I'm like, I really love an author or love somebody, I'm very reluctant to meet them.
Yes.
Because I love their work, but I like, what I want to happen is I meet them casually at a cafe, we hit up a conversation and become friends. And so every time I often give in and do meet the authors I love, and I'm like, oh, maybe this time I'll say something. I try to think of really charming things to tell them. So
you've baked an author a cake before. I remember that happening.
Oh God, Ashley, I forgot that. But this author, I also won't name names, was coming to
Melbourne. I didn't know we weren't naming names. I think we
I will name the name. When Rainbow Rowell came to Melbourne for Writers Festival, she was going to come to readings to sign books, and I was so excited, and I really wanted her to remember me. So I made her one of the birthday cakes from Australian Women's Weekly. I made the swimming pool cake.
Oh my God.
She didn't come to the office.
She didn't.
She couldn't make it. And Nina showed her a photo of my cake and she said it looked nice, but I think we can all agree it did not make me and Rainbow best friends, which
that is
what I wanted.
Terrible.
And recently another author came. Another author came who I really love, and I met her and I was like, we had a really great conversation. I was like, we're definitely best friends now. And then she went and visited other bookshops and tweeted about her new best friend at another bookshop.
I remember this.
I have failed. Anyway, so I think that's one of the perils of working in the industry, is that you do see how it works and you get to meet these people whose books you love, and you're like, oh, you're just an ordinary person and we don't actually know each other. Or and Nina, I think when you're talking about seeing your peers release books, I feel like if you weren't in the industry, you wouldn't actually see all that stuff happening, like,
no,
so yes, closely.
That's just my own neuroses. So we should finish, since we are all book people who have all worked as booksellers, let's talk about books. What are you reading right now? Have you read anything you've loved lately? Anything you want to talk about?
Well, my absolute favourite book that has really given me so much joy while we've all been in isolation is a middle grade book called As Fast As I Can, published by UQP, and it's by Penny Tangi. I'm really sorry if that's not how I say your name, Penny. But it is set in a primary school, and it's about a 10-year-old who really wants to go to the Olympics. Obviously, this was supposed to be an Olympics year. But she discovers she's really good at cross-country running, and then sort of things go wrong, obviously. I loved it because it is so funny. It is also a really great sort of study of families and friendships at primary school. And it goes into quite serious territory, but it never makes you feel sort of bleak or despair or whatever. It really makes you feel hopeful. I just think she is such a good writer for that age. And also, I just love seeing really funny books by women published for that age group, because I think we do give a lot of gongs to funny men in children's books. But she is really funny. So I love that. Who else?
That sounds so great.
Bronte, what did you love?
Well, a book I loved quite recently is The Adversary by Ronnie Scott, who's a Melbourne writer. So it's another funny book, and I think that's one of the reasons I loved it. I do find it rare for a book to make me laugh, and I definitely laughed in this book. And I was also talking about it with a friend recently who was commenting, you know, it's very much set in Melbourne. It feels so relatable and so familiar, but it's not cringing. And I think that's a really hard thing to do, to capture a current time and a current place, but not have you feel like, oh, they've casually put this reference in. It were like felt very believable.
Mm.
But just in terms of books that are comforting, I did. And because this is a writing podcast, I just wanted to flag, you both know this, but Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert is my go-to book when I'm feeling stressed about writing, or I'm really stuck or having a bad time. And I do it as the audio book, and if it's very woo-woo and a bit silly, but it's just like, if you are feeling really stuck, that is the book I would always recommend you try.
Nina, what have you loved recently?
Well, this is going to sound contrived and set up, but it's true in that I just finished reading an advanced copy of Kate's book, The Motherfold.
I'm so jealous.
It is so good. Oh my God. I loved it. I couldn't put it down. Something happens. There's kind of, I don't want to do any spoilers. There's kind of halfway through, there's kind of a setting change or something happens. And from that point onwards, I could not put the book down, except when I had to put it down because I was so stressed. I was like, stressed, put it down, but then I had to immediately pick it back up because I was so worried about the characters. It's such a page turner, but it's also so clever and says so many great things about motherhood and being a woman. Em, I think you are going to love the things she says about motherhood in there. And it's also the whole time I was just thinking this would be an amazing movie. I was casting people in my head. It's just such a great book. And
I'm
really hope
reading that. Yeah.
Kate and Catherine, I hope that you do a spoilers podcast for people who've read the book, because I really want Kate to talk about how she wrote some, like the craft of it, how she built the tension in some of the scenes, the research she did, how she came up with certain things. I really want an in-depth discussion about this book for people who've read it that goes really, like, so you can be spoiler heavy and just go into all of it, because I think it's such an interesting book from a writer's perspective around the kinds of things she's done, and the kind of, it's kind of touching on multiple sort of genres. It's really interesting.
We do read quite widely in this group, I think. I mean, obviously, we go through phases of different things, but my reading definitely goes from sort of adult to YA to middle grade and, you know, all around the place.
Yes. While we're on the topic of YA, I want to shout out How to Grow a Family Tree by Eliza Henry-Jones. Such a just warm, nourishing, lovely book about family. If anyone wants to sort of feel warm their heart, then I think read that book. Please Don't Hug Me by Kay Kerr is a great Own Voices YA that's out at the moment. That's so good. And coming up is Lona by Georgina Young, which is the text prize winner from last year, and I loved it as well. Books at the moment.
I know this could go on forever, but just to give one more YA shout out, because one of my jobs at Readings is managing the prizes they run, and the Young Adult shortlist just got announced. And I always ambitiously try to read through the shortlist, never make it. But this year I just did read Ghostbird by Lisa Fuller.
Yes, I've read that as well.
Oh, it's so good. It's so scary, like genuinely scary in places. Really interesting, very like also a family story. I don't know. I really loved that one.
I love the family elements of that book. That's fantastic. What's the other one on that readings prize shortlist that I've read? I think it's Wei Chim's book,
Surprising Power of Dumpling.
Dumpling.
Oh, I love that book. Love that book. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the list.
Are we done? Do we have any other wisdom about writing to impart before we end?
The only thing I feel like everyone should share, just like a little thing about their work in progress at the moment.
See, this is Bronte making us accountable, as she does.
I'll go first. So there's hopefully going to be an exorcism in my book. That's my one detail.
Knowing what right you're writing about, that really intrigues me. Having read the first chapter.
I have to
get from that first chapter to the exorcism.
So that's not in chapter two then, is that what you're saying?
No. What about you guys?
I am about to start, well, I have started draft three, which allegedly is supposed to be the draft where I get it right, a middle grade, it's about a girl who's actually just finished primary school. I've really wanted to write a book that sort of takes place in between primary school and high school. And it is a ghost story. Nina, what are you working on?
I think I'm on draft 7, maybe 8. I don't even know anymore. It's another YA. I can't even talk about it. I'm in a dark place. So
we have had a taste of this book, and I don't know how you can be in a dark place, because it's just so witty and charming, just like your debut novel. Just trust us.
Yeah. I had so many feelings just reading the little bit that you've shared with us so far. Like, I was full of feelings, and I feel like that's very amazing.
Cool. See, this is the kindness you need when you're a writer in a writing group, to lift you up.
Yeah.
All right, we should end it. I think we've gone over time.
Bye, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons.
This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.